Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Hi, I'm Nancy Cartwright. You may know me better as the voice of Bart Simpson.
On Simpsons Declassified, we're diving into the mysteries that keep the Simpsons forever young. Have you ever wondered how the Simpsons regularly predicts future events? Who better to ask than the show's creators, performers, and writers? The celebrity guests. Be sure to follow and listen to Simpsons Declassified wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning, everybody. We are simulcasting live here at Parkside Cafe, and we're also live on WTIC News Talk 1080. As for the second time, we have a mayoral debate for the city of Bristol. We want to thank J.R. Rusgrove and the folks at Parkside Cafe, as well as the two candidates for being willing to do such an event. So we are very grateful for that. And for people in the audience, again, as we talked earlier, be respectful. Both of these candidates love Bristol, have a vision for it. They may be different, but they both want the best for this city. So basically the format is going to be kind of two types of questions. We will have a question that will go to either the sitting mayor or the former mayor, and they will have a minute to answer that question, and then there will be a response, and then the original person who was asked can have a closing statement. If they are having a conversation that seems worthy of letting go and they're being respectful, I will let that conversation continue. There'll be another type of question where it's really essentially the same question to both, and in those situations, you will each have equal time. And it'll be basically a minute. We're going to start with an opening statement. They will each get a minute to do that. And then we will continue with the debate. And we thank everybody in the audience for far too many questions than we can get to. But again, no cell phones at the dais. They've chosen to have their own notes as well. And we're going to start it off with Republican Mayor Jeff Caggiano and his opening statement.
Thank you, Brian. I want to thank JR for hosting here and Brian for putting local Bristol politics on the map. It's a great thing that we're going to talk about city politics. I had three goals for the city when I was elected. I wanted a complete downtown development. I wanted to increase communication, transparency, and operate more efficiently as a government. I wanted to improve public safety. In 1961, the city of Bristol began urban renewal, and we tore down the heart of our city. According to the Hartford Current, in 2023, Bristol is seeing the hottest municipal construction season ever. And with only an acre and a half left to develop in the Center Square property, I'm looking forward to finish what we started. The Secretary of State's office reports that Bristol is averaging 588 new businesses per year, where in a better pre-COVID economy, 4 years earlier, we averaged just 332. On public safety, I'm very proud that we're one of the fully staffed cities for the police department. And this is after adding two new certified officers. We did that with non-taxpayer dollars, and we can talk about that when we get into the debate. But we have restaffed after 2022's tragedy, and I'm looking forward to having a good open discussion today.
And now we take it from Republican Mayor Jeff Caggiano to Democratic Challenger Ellen Zoppo Sasso.
Thank you. The job of a mayor is a difficult balance. First, you have to win a popularity contest to become mayor, and then you realize that the job isn't to be popular, it's to be clear. To explain hard truths when people want easy answers, to maintain integrity, and to create synergy across departments. Our team, while we were in office, worked together to build strong neighborhoods, created the blueprint for the downtown that you see today, funded education, supported local businesses, and listened to all voices. But there's more to be done. Families and small businesses are struggling to make ends meet. Unfunded mandates are hurting us from all levels of government, and we are also facing reduced funding from federal and state. Great cities just don't happen. A city thrives because the people in charge respect the process, each other, and the responsibility they've been given to set priorities and to be good stewards of taxpayer dollars. Kicking the can down the road doesn't solve the problem. And to be clear, No one wants to raise taxes, but there's a difference between being upfront about hard truths and pretending that we can continue to put off that school roof or delay that park project or buy a critical piece of equipment. My administration, while far from perfect, engaged in responsible planning and manageable tax increases, and that's where I think we need to go back to.
Thank you. Thank you for that. We'll start with, and we will get to taxes in a few minutes. I think we'll start with some very simple type questions, and we want to get off the talking points and the scripts if best we can. I'll start with you, Ellen. Why do you want and deserve to return as mayor of the city of Bristol?
I think that my approach to public service is one that you look at it in terms of building the community that you grew up in. I've been attending city meetings since I was 10 years old, and it always amazed me, and I felt honored to see government at work. So whether it was the Board of Finance meeting where you had all these people march in at 4 o'clock on a Tuesday afternoon, still wearing their suits and ties because they were the bishops of Bristol from all types of high-end industries, to what we see today with our diversity commission, we have this great group of people that want what's best for their local government. What's needed is the leadership to ensure that we can hit all of those tones. There's so much that needs to be done, and I think that what needs to be there is leadership that can keep all the balls in the air. And I think that what we've done over time has shown that we can do that, and I think it needs to come back because there has been balls that have been dropped.
Jeff, why do you want and why do you think you deserve a third term?
Well, I think the answer is pretty simple. I walked from City Hall to this venue today, and I saw the revitalization of our city. As I talked about in my opening statements, we have had 15 administrations since we started urban renewal 61 years ago, and the whole of the heart of our city is what our economic problem is right now. Now, there's greater economic problems throughout the whole state of Connecticut, but Bristol is positioned very well in the future to solve some of those economic problems that we have. We're going to talk about taxes later, but that growth is going to allow us to get our way out of that. And to be very honest, there has been none of that growth for 15 administrations before this. I am literally an acre and a half away from selling the last parcel that we own in the Center Square Mall area, and that was my main focus coming in. I got another 2 years to finish it. I actually wish I finished it in the 4 years, but what we've gotten accomplished to this point is pretty dramatic.
Okay, so I'll take this to Ellen. Thank you much for that, because that it's a perfect segue, and I'll read it just as I wrote it. Ellen, how responsible do you feel about the progress downtown?
Well, at first, I think it's disingenuous to disregard 61 years of effort. I wrote my senior thesis on downtown. We can talk about that all day. But the fact of the matter is that changing demographics affected Bristol more than anything. They started with good intentions, but at the end of the day, Mayor Kuchar acquired the mall. Mayor Ward had to deal with the remediation. There was all kinds of issues that happened, and then we started development. So everybody had a piece of it. So the 61 years is kind of annoying. I'd also like to point out that on Monday, September 8th, City seeks developer for last Center Mall parcel, which is 4 years from the day somebody took office. So I guess my point is, it takes time. We took 4 years, including a COVID management period where things slowed down, in order to put together the thoughtful plan that you see behind us. We did the infrastructure because we knew it would be more attractive to the developers if everything was already in the ground. I talked to local developers and said, why didn't the Renaissance project work? They gave great advice, and that's what we decided to do. We decided to do the mix of business and residential so that people would always be here. And then we did the infrastructure, including planning for the parking garages and everything that's under Hope Street.
Mr. Mayor?
Well, there's a lot I can say. And the first thing I want to talk about is that there is a young vibe in this city. So in the last 4 years, we've seen 20 to 39-year-olds become the fastest growing population as well as the largest segment of the population. Why are they here? Because instead of planning and going through theses and all kinds of plans, we got it done. The fact is that when I took office, I moved out of City Hall. I gave the previous mayor full credit for getting the City Hall project done, up and running, 90% design when I got in there. And we let it happen, and we got it under budget and on time. When I went back into City Hall, I saw an empty lot across the street. There's no denying that the four projects, the four shovels that went in the ground, happened between 2022 and 2025, where we are now. I have 1.5 acres left to go. I think it's obvious for people to see that things got done. And I'm sorry if I'm offending people by talking about the history, but I do that purposely because a 2-year term is a tough time for mayors to get things done. And we got it done. I'm asking for 2 more years to finish the job.
Last word.
Revisionist history is still part of history.
Okay, we'll move on to the next issue, and this is a one that, in terms of looking at things in terms of research, WFSB reported, Jeff, 27% increase in property taxes over 4 years. Is this accurate? And if so, what are you going to do to ease the burden for Bristol homeowners?
Yeah, I think it is accurate. Unfortunately, the state of Connecticut has a property tax problem, so much so that our comptroller, Sean Scanlon, has put together a task force. He's a Democrat, by the way, to relieve property taxes across the state. There's a lot of issues that go behind this, and somebody texted me this morning and just said, hey, I hope everybody knows the mayor's not the one that makes this decision. I see a lot of Board of Finance members in here as well, too. We have a strong Board of Finance. We're keeping up with the same types of inflationary pressures that you all are, electric costs, gas costs, things of that sort. And it's a very difficult situation for everybody. So taxes clearly did go up. There are some, and we had a 35% increase in home values in the city of Bristol. While you're not, if you're not selling your home, I know you know that's not a big deal, and it might increase your taxes. But this burden shift over to homeowners is happening all over the place. In the city of Bristol, we also have an issue. We have overspending on the Board of Education, and this is just a fact. Over the last 2 years, the Board of Education reported a $1.8 million potential deficit in May when we set our budget, and they came in at a $3.4 million deficit. This year, they came in at a $5.9 million deficit. And that's on top of giving them $14.5 million new dollars in my administration to operate. And special education costs are a big part of this, not coming down from the state. State mandates aside, we have a problem that we can fix.
We'll get to some specific Board of Education questions in a little bit, but your chance to respond.
So I'm going to, again, refresh everybody's memory from Mr. Caggiano's 2021 campaign brochure, which says Bristol has a spending problem. And he definitely is true on that, because in the last 4 years, the Bristol Board of Ed trending budget increase has been 12% over 4 years for a total additional revenue into their budget of $15,411,000. But on the city side grew 20%. Spending problem, $17,652,945, almost $18 million in additional spending on the city side. So, back to the brochure of 21. Increased spending during the worst economic crisis of our lifetime, my administration. Excessive department head pay increases, didn't change any of them. Can you imagine the tax increase if this continues? And I think we see that today.
I would love to respond to that because my numbers are a little bit different. And I went back and it gets very difficult because budget years don't match actual years. So the last budget that the former administration put together was the 22 budget year. I was already elected, remember. We look at the 4 years of education. The Democrat in power gave $11.3 million to our Board of Ed. And I think percentage is important here. That's 2.47% increase. Now, over the last 4 years, so this is a nice apples-to-apples comparison, we've given $14.2 million to the Board of Education, which is a 2.78% increase. I guess my question back to the mayor is, they complain about taxes going up, and they have these signs all over town that say taxes are going up, but two Democrats voted against the budget this year because they wanted more money for the Board of Education. How is that not going to raise taxes?
So there's, we'll pause here, and we'll also say for everyone listening at home and listening here, I can't fact check data in real time, so I don't know what data is true and what's not true. So that's something you just have to keep in mind. I try to fact check when I can, but I don't have the resources to do that in real time. The two questions I have, one is for each of you on this topic, since we are rolling a little bit. One is, Ms. Sapo-Sasu, what would you have done given the same situation had you been mayor? Now, it's a big question, and you only have a certain amount of time to answer it. But like, if you were in the, if you had the same conditions that Mayor Caggiano had over the 4 years, what you would you have done differently? And is it specifically related maybe to taxing and spending?
So we obviously knew that managing taxes had two pieces to it. And what we did is we leveraged scarce and dwindling resources. We also maximized retirements and attrition and eliminated, I think the number was 15 positions out of the city, but we ended up adding three back in critical places because we knew that maintaining cutting was as important as funding programs. We also filled in gaps with social service safety net with a lot of robust nonprofit partnerships. We identified key areas that need to be boosted. We merged departments together. We eliminated some duplication. So all of that is a constant across the line. But I would like to get back to some of the Bristol School deficit issues with the Board of Education, if that's possible.
Well, I would like to do that, but I was specifically interested if you had the same sort of scenario during, if you had served, continued to serve, how would you have handled some of the situations? And I'll just put a pause in it because you gave an answer there. To the mayor, I would say some municipalities changed the mill rate so property taxes did not go up. Why didn't you do that?
We actually did do that. So the second budget that I did, we took the mill rate from 38 down to 30.35 at that time. This was before the Board of Education overspending, and that reduced taxes for many people. But again, this burden shift on the home values might have created some differences there. It was a $1.4 billion. I'll call it a fake grand list growth. And there are towns and cities all over the state of Connecticut that are seeing this. There's nothing that either of us as mayor could have done about that. But what I will go back to, because I think it's an important point, is the 61 years of lack of development downtown made all the commercial properties across the state that were losing value have a greater impact on our homeowners and our residents. Had we had even one commercial project break ground in those 4 years, we had great economic times before COVID, and 3 years of her administration was pre-COVID, that would have helped those taxpayers. So listen, my solution long-term to the original question was we need to continue development in downtown to spread these taxes out.
So let's talk about education. And again, the people in the audience, they know about, it seems like we're very publicly active community here, and they know the issues. People listening at home in our audience at WTIC may not know the dynamic of the relationship with the Board of Education. I have no less than five or six questions submitted by people in the audience related to it, and I don't really know how to distill it into one question, but I'll put it to you first, Ellen, in terms of describe the state of education in the town, and what is the budget issue that you wanted to raise?
Well, we're going to go back to September 23rd, where Bristol was put on notice by the Department of Education for non-compliance with the minimum budget requirements, which I, in my recent history, is the last time, the only time that I've seen that happen, which brings us to the October 22nd, 2024 Board of Finance meeting, which was to make an additional appropriation of $3.4 million within the general fund back to the Board of Education. So here's the issues in bullet point. Chronic underfunding versus known cost trends. That is not overspending, it's underfunding. Failure to match real growth and state mandates. Optimistic reimbursement assumptions, which were left unfilled because it was easier that way, and that's related to excess cost. Reactive, not proactive budgeting. Outdated financial structure, and if you read the audit, you will see all of this in there. The audit was actually commissioned by the mayor and talked about all of the issues and the areas for improvement, including the fact that this underfunding has occurred over the last 4 years. I believe it's page 14. But we don't talk about that anymore because that audit didn't give us the answers that we wanted from our narrative. So outdated financial infrastructure, shared accountability, but no shared solution. So it doesn't work when you're constantly yelling and screaming at each other. And the first time that the Board of Ed dutifully per state reported that they were running a deficit should have been the time that the conversation started about how to fix it. That, and my last point, lack of contingency planning. A lot of this falls to the fact that we're chaos and lurching, not planning.
Just have to correct the revisionist history record because we do an audit every 5 or 6 years on the Board of Ed. I happened to be on the Board of Ed in 2017 when we did our first audit, and we were $2 million in deficit spending on special education at that time. This is a problem that has happened while the previous administration was in there, and that kept growing. We assumed that there was about a $5 million deficit in special education, and I'm looking around this room, and I believe I was the only one to stand by a Democrat governor of this state to go in and ask for more excess cost funding. Everybody in this room could have been up there and asked for more. We have $40 million of excess cost spending that's come back. I appreciate that from the state. But when people talk about, you know, we need to have solutions, I see the solutions and we go after them. We are on a much better path with the Board of Education right now. But it's interesting that you brought up that we need to pay attention to the deficit spending and handling it. On August 17th, that same year that you just highlighted, we received a non-compliance letter and more money needed on the same day, August 17th. That was kind of interesting.
Last word on this issue, if you want.
So when Connecticut expanded the obligation to serve special education students to age 22, the city did not increase its appropriation to offset that addition, $600,000, which, again, it becomes a cycle of leaving the district structurally short. So think about your own households. You can't afford something, maybe put it on a credit card, maybe borrow. The hole keeps getting deeper, and that's what's happened. And some people want to fix it, but you just can't fix it by pointing fingers. You have to have constructive conversations with your partners.
Let's pause here for a second. We have about a minute and a half. I want to take a step. I know it's so fast. step back. If we could just take 30 seconds each and get outside of the minutia for a second and just give 30 seconds on what is your leadership style? You know, how do you approach managing a city like Bristol? Just 30 seconds each, and then we'll go into a short break.
Me first?
Yes.
I came into this city, and I'm very proud of the leadership style that I learned in my business background. You know, it's servant leadership. I give a lot of autonomy to our department heads. I do think that's a major change, and that's not just the previous administration. But the reason we're getting so much done in the city of Bristol is we're letting city workers do the job that they're paid and hired for. And Ellen will agree with me on this one, is we get paid a lot less money as mayor than a lot of them. So I've really come in and been open to them. I'm the first mayor, and I will brag about this, that has annual reviews with every single department head. We have open conversations, and we let people do their job.
Ms. Zappos-Sasu.
I think autonomy is good. We have really great leaders in our departments, but I think some of them are struggling with the lack of leadership and direction from the top. And I know that personally, over the last 4 years, I have written 8 letters of reference for department heads who don't feel comfortable in the city of Bristol and are looking for other opportunities. Some of them have left, some of them are considering it, and I think that autonomy doesn't mean to let people do whatever they want. They still need direction, there still needs to be connections across departments. So all of the work that we did to have departments coexist and work together across departments and share resources, some of them feel that that fabric has been ripped apart and that they don't feel that that's happening anymore, and that costs.
Listen up, football fans, you won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5.
I know where I'm going to bet from now on.
Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Hi, I'm Nancy Cartwright. You may know me better as the voice of Bart Simpson.
On Simpsons Declassified, we're diving into the mysteries that keep the Simpsons forever young. Have you ever wondered how the Simpsons regularly predicts future events? Who better to ask than the show's creators, performers, and writers, the celebrity guests? Be sure to follow and listen to Simpsons Declassified wherever you get your podcasts.
Money in the end, and efficiency.
Welcome back to Brian and Company, live for you at Parkside Cafe in the city of Bristol. We are having a mayoral debate between two-term Mayor Jeff Caggiano looking for a third term and former Mayor of Bristol Ellen Zappos-Sasu. And again, we had a spirited first half. We're going toward the second half of the debate. And I think I want to start with Medicaid. There's a lot of confusion whether the potential cuts from the federal government will trickle down. and this is something even I'm confused by, is there any, can you give any clarity to people how cuts to Medicaid to the state would then impact a place like Bristol? I'll start with you, Mr. Mayor.
I think the good news right now is we haven't seen a direct impact yet. We could see over time that that might trickle down for services, but on a city level, I'm going to make this more simple, I think, is those state and federal programs that are mostly social programs have downward impacts on the city, but the city has three main functions. We take care of public education, we take care of public safety, and we take care of all those public works things. It's the garbage being taken out, the roads and things of that sort. So the trickle-down effects could affect homelessness and other things like that. Then the city has to take the burden on, but that hasn't happened to this degree. And I do want to get people back to the straight answer to the question is, that's not the role of city government. That's the role of state and federal government.
I don't know if you have a response to that. It's a bit of a left field, but I get a lot of questions about confusion about how cuts in federal spending like Medicaid would impact a municipality like this.
Well, I think we're already seeing the impact with one of our major employers, Bristol Hospital. Bristol Hospital is a huge community asset. We have an integrated health system from birth to death. We have emergency room, we have an ambulance. We have Ingram Manor, which is now for sale because they can't afford to do business anymore, mostly because of the Medicaid reimbursement that's offered and the fact that they serve people who come into the emergency room who can't afford to be there. So, yes, this is a huge issue, and it's one why I worked very closely with the hospital when I was mayor, and we integrated a lot of services. One of the ones that is the most important, I think, is the intersection of mental health, homelessness, and addiction. And we see that in our community, and I hope that homelessness does have a question in our future, because, yes, my opponent calls himself a Reagan Republican. Lower taxes, smaller government, limited government regulations. But I think more like FDR, and that the test of our progress is not where we add more to the abundance of those who have much, but those, what we do for those that provide enough for those who have too little. And we have a serious social issue problem in Bristol that is linked directly to lack of reimbursement, lack of funding. And Medicaid is hitting people on the street right now. They're getting reduced money on their gray card, they're not able to pay for their medications, and it's spiraling. So yes, the role of government is to create that safety net so that we can stop the bleeding.
Jeff,
Two comments, and this is out to my friend Kurt Barwis, who let me know that I could say this, that he is actually for the integration of Bristol Health with UConn. I have many years of background in the biotech and pharma industry, and I think that'll bring greater services here, and our president and CEO of Bristol Health believes that as well, too. I will say we need to be more innovative in our approach, and so I want to give you one example that I have done, is we've taken non-taxpayer dollars, and my worry about this is we don't want to take another item like homelessness and other things and create a budget line item that we're not going to be able to sustain. But we took Opioid Settlement Action Committee money, and we helped a group of homeless people over on Prospect Street. We took them from encampment to housing, and I did get kudos from our governor, who took $60 million of that opioid settlement money and are trying to do the same thing on a statewide level.
I want to move on to a couple of questions from the audience. One is directed directly at you, Ellen, and you don't need to respond. People want to know, what was the dynamic that led to you leaving the city of Enfield?
When I left being mayor, after we lost that election, I served in Enfield for 2 years as a town manager, which I loved, mostly because you don't have to do this. And we had a great team up there, and it was a recently Democratic control of the town council. Council manager, town manager form of government is very different. So I was an employee of the town council, and there was a Democratic mayor who I had a great relationship with. They lost their election in 23, and the incoming Republican mayor, who I had a very good relationship with, told me, you know, I don't know that I can control my caucus. And they had the supermajority. In Enfield, any six votes get you onto the agenda. Doesn't matter if you're approving minutes, firing the town manager, hiring the town manager, approving the Board of Ed budget, all you need is six votes out of the 11 present at a town council meeting. So I think that what's really important is leadership isn't always about staying, no matter what. Sometimes it's knowing when your presence is no longer moving the mission forward. And I thought that I had done great work creating a team aspect with our department heads, doing a lot of what we had done in Bristol, looking at things with a set of outside eyes. And I knew that that probably was going to not be the story if I stayed. I would be the story. The town assessor would be the story. The school superintendent would continue to be the story because we had funding issues there as well. So several of us, including school superintendent, myself, the town attorney, we exited Enfield because it was best for the town, it was best for the mission, it was best for the narrative, and it was best for the people who were going to be staying there in order for them to continue their work. And I think that's the sign of leadership, is knowing that as well.
Thank you for that answer. This one will be directed at Mayor Caggiano with Ellen with a chance to get to a response. This again from someone in the audience. How have you improved services for seniors, low-income residents, or marginalized groups? Be specific.
Well, I think we're going to do something very soon to the senior tax home credit program, where we're going to increase the salary limit, because we know that people are hurting here. And it's not a direct answer, and I'm a very direct, straightforward person. I can't help an individual. All we can do is lift the entire city. So what has happened with about $150 million of potential new grand list growth, and as many of you may or may not know, that phases in over time due to state mandates to give people tax abatements. We're going to see changes in the future. We also had hiring freezes in the city of Bristol for the first time ever that I'm aware of. We eliminated positions as well. We held our spending, and we actually brought back, because of good investments, $5.8 million to offset the $5.9 million deficit we had on the Board of Ed. You got to take these things as they come, and I'm asking for two more years of patience so that we can do what wasn't done in the previous administrations, is stabilize our tax base.
So I guess you can respond to that specifically, or you could answer the question, which is how would you improve services for seniors, low-income residents, or marginalized groups?
Well, I do want to pick up a thread that I didn't get a chance to respond on before about the use of opioid task force dollars. I believe that was in reference to clearing out the encampment that was on Prospect Street. Journey Home was involved, and dozens of people were moved. And according to the people who run the social service agencies here in town, every single one of them, except one who's now pregnant and probably not going to be able to keep her baby, every one of those people is back on the streets. So it didn't work. So that's good money being thrown after a program that looks good on paper, but when you don't have the wraparound services to provide the services, whether they be mental health, addiction, or an intersection of both, it fails. You can't just check a box with the social service issues. Homelessness in Bristol is a serious issue. And I'm going to ask you, do you know what happened to Cynthia and Dave?
I don't personally know Cynthia and Dave, but yeah, I will fact check you on the
does.
Journey Home reported to me that they only housed six people, and all six people are still housed and they're doing well.
Listen,
this is an area where there's a clear distinction between you and I. I want to help those people. We'll come up with innovative programs. It's not part of the city budget. And this is the kind of very disingenuousness of blaming all the taxes on Jeff, but yet creating new services that will raise our taxes. We need to partner with the state of Connecticut, who took $60 million of their money to try to replicate this program. I hope they have better success.
Oh, I do,
it's
too.
A very difficult problem. Obviously, mental health issues and other things are there. Just real quickly.
You asked
and then
him,
I'll let you go.
In fairness, you asked him a question.
Exactly. So, so we also took our cannabis money that we get from adult recreation sales, and I know that wasn't a popular decision across the city, but we hired two community wellness officers off of not direct taxpayer money. Obviously, the people that are using the cannabis are paying that. And those two community wellness officers are now getting out into the community. We had a one-year anniversary of that. They're sustainable funding for that. And I think these are real solutions that are innovative, but don't increase our tax dollars.
Ms. Salvasasso, I'll give you 30 seconds, but I'm going to hold you to it.
Yep. The opioid task force was a vibrant piece of our landscape here, and it was making real solutions. The COBRA program and getting people into recovery beds, they don't even meet anymore. Whenever I check the agenda, it usually says that the meeting's been canceled and they've been moved to quarterly. the problem's not going away, but the audience that needs the answers from government who can provide that framework, whether it be tax dollars or social service dollars, they don't have an audience
anymore. Can we please have 30?
I just have to fact check that one. The opioids task force put the $80,000 from the opioid funds towards the Journey Home program, and you can come to our meeting on October 10th because that's the next meeting.
Can we please have 30 seconds on seniors to both of you?
So the senior tax credit and the volunteer tax credit happened with our administration, and I think that attention needs to be given to creating the senior center to be, it's one of the best senior centers in the state, but more people need to go there. The fact that people are living independently longer and in isolation is a real issue. So creating third places, which means the senior center, or in some cases it's people's churches and community areas, that's what keeps our seniors connected, and it's what keeps them medication adherent, it keeps them talking to their neighbors, it keeps them safe.
I disagree with one thing she said. She said the senior center is one of the best in the state. It is the best in the state, and we are investing money to fix the parking lot. I see a lot of seniors here that have been complaining about that for years, and we are also moving Bristol Burlington Health Department over to an open part of the building where Beck Center lived, and we now are increasing our space there. I think we do need to invest in our community. We have about 40 seniors that add to the senior center every year, and you know, we have a lot of people to take care of. Remember, we have that young population that's moving in that has overtaken our senior population as well. So we got to take care of them as well.
We are currently at 8:48. We have just a few minutes left, and it's there's a lot of issues still to discuss. I'm going to put this to Ms. Zappos-Sasu. It's going to be a very direct question, and you can take it where you'd like. In the current political climate, how would you handle issues, organization, and implementation of DEI?
Well, I mean, I think that a lot of that is mandated, but what in the city of Bristol, my administration in the spring of 2018 formed the first diversity committee, and we had a very diverse group of people from all walks of life, from all nationalities, religions, etc. And I think that it did a lot of really great work and conversations over the course of the last administration. I understand that it's in transition, that it's looking to find a new purpose and focus, and I think that these conversations have to continue. Sometimes they're not easy ones, and I think we've seen over the course of the past week that sometimes controversial content leads to violence instead of dialogue and thoughtful responses. And I think that if the Diversity Council here in Bristol can be that role model to make people feel safe to have conversations that might make some people uncomfortable but provoke critical thinking and better understanding, then I think that that still belongs under government, and I think it's a role that they need to continue to play.
Can I add on that?
Yeah,
so
of course.
I'm actually proud that in 2022 we did a DEI survey within the city of Bristol, and just an overall quality survey, and the results were very good for City Hall employees at that time. The other thing that I want to mention is Diversity Council. I think there's been some innuendos that the Diversity Council is something I'm trying to get rid of. JR is going to kill me for this, but they just came together and they're looking at diversity and inclusion and connecting that with economic and community development. So I'll remind all of you that just up the street over here, our friends at Guac and Roll are the first cash mob that's going to be hosted by the Diversity Council. So, you know, they have seen a lot of ups and downs. I'm very supportive of them in their mission, and I think they're moving into a different mission where we're going to celebrate diversity and inclusion. I don't think there's anybody here that would disagree with that.
Okay, I want to get to one issue I know nothing about, okay? And I just want to do it quickly and move on. I got two questions on Sheridan Woods. I don't know anything about it, but the questions were basically how will you make sure that it will remain open long-term and fund it? I guess I'll put it to you first.
Yeah, I went with Senator Henry Martin and Mary Fortier, bipartisan effort to maybe go in and talk about that facility and how important it was to Bristol. I announced at a city council meeting, I think it was 2 months ago now, that they were allowed to take residents back in, and they are admitting residents, and we're very hopeful that that sale, and I think Ellen mentioned that earlier, will go through. It is a vital part of the community, and you know, the state is actually very struggling very mightily on trying to fund these facilities because of Medicaid and Medicare cuts, and we need to fight for it here. Again, I'm not against having a bipartisan representation on the state level. It's another state issue, obviously, because the state runs our nursing homes, but happy to report that I believe that we're in good shape. Again, we need a private deal to happen. I'm knocking on wood that it's going to happen, but talking to the leadership group there, they're pretty confident.
I think this is probably one of the larger differences with leadership. So I was at that public hearing because I have a lot of friends at Sheridan Woods, and I call them friends, but they're also residents. I stayed for the entire public hearing, as did Representative Fortier. The mayor did not. Neither did Senator Martin. They came in, they dropped their papers, they said their piece, and they were out the door. But for 3 hours, we sat there and listened to people who, some who don't have family or friends to take care of them, that Sheridan Woods is their home. The city was too late for Countryside, but we were not too late for Sheridan. And it's mostly because of advocacy of the family like Jerry Gisondi, who's no longer with us, who died over the summer, who was a fierce advocate for his sister. I'm at Sheridan Woods probably 3 times a week because my friend Ed, who I take care of, needs his Jolly Ranchers. Sometimes he needs a different size Band-Aid than what they provide him. Now I'm friends with Debbie, whose brother died over the summer, and I take care of Alejandra, and there's other people there. These people are just not warehoused at Sheridan Woods. They need visitors, they need friends, they need a connection to their community.
Jeff, you and we did advocate for housing
30 seconds.
All I'll say is what we advocated for, which is something we should look at, is the state of Connecticut is sitting on a huge pot of money for housing, and they're not releasing it. My argument was very clear then. These are their residences. This is their housing. The state should help to keep these places in business. Listen, I don't run the state. The opposite party does. And so I think we need to hold them accountable as well.
Okay, let's move on. We have only a couple minutes left, and I want to actually have a little fun, if we could, with some rapid-fire questions. But I do, we'd be remiss if we didn't spend a minute each on public safety and crime. I think this first question goes to you. And it would be, how do you view right now public safety and crime and the police force in the city of Bristol?
I think everything is going well. I think we have a very well-qualified and credentialed police department. I think that the course of policing has changed over the course of the last 20 years since I was first elected to the city council, and there needs to be pivoting. School resource officers, of which my husband was one for 12 years, play a critical role. The positions that now within the department are affecting community outreach are critical. But, you know, there's still traffic issues. And I think that as the community evolves, so does the response. So I think an enlarged traffic division and reallocation of resources there is something. I also think that the detectives, in certain times, caseloads are very high. So if we're going to be solving crimes, we need to give them the resources that they need. But overall, I think our police department ranks very high.
I couldn't agree more. I will I gotta add something. I'm sorry to throw this on everybody here, but just this week, I received the endorsement from both the police department and the fire department. I think that speaks, we could have a clap. I saw somebody who wanted to clap. Mm-hmm. I think that speaks to the relationship that I have with them and the ability to get them the resources they need, and this has been a primary focus for me. They have stepped up enforcement in this town, so be careful. Drive safely out there. They're pulling you over. They're giving too many warnings and not enough tickets, in my estimation. But we also, this is the difference between the former mayor and myself, is we had a very open debate and dialogue on the traffic enforcement cameras, and we have put a pause on that because we heard from the community that they didn't want it. These are the types of things that I do out in open public forums and, you know, quite honestly, don't script meetings and tell people that they can't do that.
20 seconds on whether you want to comment on speed cameras or...
Well, I'm wondering what the next tax increase is going to be, because I'm sure the fire department is looking for their 16 new firefighters and their tower truck that's going to be parked at the new Engine 3. That's about a $1.62 million annual expenditure, so we'll see how that gets paid.
Okay, we need to move on. We're going to do some rapid fire and try to squeeze in final statements from both. I will apologize. My kids helped me with a list.
Uh-oh.
And you just better buckle up. They have not been getting any briefing on this, so... I'll start with you. Pancake, waffles, or French toast?
French toast.
Same.
Coffee or tea?
Coffee.
Coffee.
Favorite fast food place. I want a brand. Like, for me, it's Chipotle.
I'll let you go first.
Taco Bell.
That's old school. I like it. But it might be Chick-fil-A for me because they're coming to Bristol.
All right. A favorite movie of all time?
You know, mine is one that's kind of easy. It's The Incredibles because it spans all audiences. If you're an adult and you go watch it, my kids were younger when that came out, and we enjoyed it as much as the kids. So it's just a good movie, good wholesome movie. Top Gun 2 might be my second choice.
I think the last movie I saw was Toy Story.
Oh, wow.
Another
good one. It's going back a ways, but it's a good one. Favorite streaming show? I had to add that in because my kids were like, nobody watches movies.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Hi, I'm Nancy Cartwright. You may know me better as the voice of Bart Simpson.
On Simpsons Declassified, we're diving into the mysteries that keep the Simpsons forever young. Have you ever wondered how the Simpsons regularly predicts future events? Who better to ask than the show's creators, performers, and writers? The celebrity guests. Be sure to follow and listen to Simpsons Declassified wherever you get your podcasts.
Dad. Ted Lasso,
Bridgerton.
Ted Lasso is probably the last one I saw. I do too many.
These guys are working
shows.
Too much.
I do. I don't watch TV.
Physical book, Kindle, or audio?
Physical book and Kindle.
Physical book.
If you had to ask the question, if you have a hobby, what's your hobby?
My hobby is probably soccer. I still try to get out and do refereeing when I can because it's fun to give back and stay involved.
Thrift stores. Dressed nice. By hand to hand
this
right up the street.
This question will parlay into your final statement, so I'll give you a minute each. I'll give it to you. In 2 years, Bristol will be dot, dot, dot. Why don't you go ahead versus Ms. Sapol-Sussell?
I think that I'll play off of the 61 years of downtown revitalization. I think in 2 years you're going to see a lot less empty lots, but what you hopefully will see is a renewed sense of civic pride. And what I mean by that is all of the pieces coming together across 61 years of people who served this town, for better or for worse, whether it was the redevelopment agency that created a huge conflict with how to develop the Center Mall back in 1964, or whether it was the decision to bury the river that was actually too deep to be uncovered anyway, or the planner who decided that the streets needed to be as wide as they were, which unencumbered people have difficulty crossing. It's the civic pride piece. It's the lights on at the Rockwell Theater when you drive down the Memorial Boulevard and knowing that that is a cornerstone of economic development. It's looking over at the old Wallace Barnes factory and seeing that the D'Amato Construction Company headquarters and Tracy Driscoll and others filling up. It's the sense that there's a vibe, that people are back, and it's based on our history, but also hoping to be the part for our future.
Mr. Mayor.
I think it's a continuation. The one thing I disagree with it is there will be no empty lots downtown, and the city won't own any of them in the next 2 years. We're going out to bid this month on that. I really think that the vibe of this city has changed and will continue to change towards that younger demographic that's coming here from New Britain, Waterbury, other cities. I've met people from Texas, Alabama, Minnesota. Bristol is on the move. It's been on the move for the last 3 years, and I really look forward to being here as mayor to wrap these things up. I've committed to all of you that I guarantee you this is the last time I'm running for mayor. I think civic service is about doing your duty, doing the best you can. I work, live, and play downtown because I want to be the vision of the future, and I think my biggest job is to be cheerleader for this city, and I thank JR and others because I heard him earlier. People do feel the difference, and I want to continue that difference.
Okay, the radio side can take news if they would like. I want to thank you both for the spirit of debate. I want to thank the audience for being so respectful and your questions. We are wrapping things up. And again, thank you to J.R. Rusgrove and all the folks here at Parkside Cafe.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Hi, I'm Nancy Cartwright. You may know me better as the voice of Bart Simpson.
On Simpsons Declassified, we're diving into the mysteries that keep the Simpsons forever young. Have you ever wondered how the Simpsons regularly predicts future events? Who better to ask than the show's creators, performers, and writers? The celebrity guests. Be sure to follow and listen to Simpsons Declassified wherever you get your podcasts.